This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, this afternoon we had hoped to have Congressman Ron Paul with us, but there were some votes that were going to be held this evening. The Democrats are trying to sneak some things through there. And in the lieu of Congressman Ron Paul, we have a man who's worked very, very closely with him for many years, Kent Snyder. Hi, Kent. How are you doing?
Good evening, sir. Glad to be with you.
How long have you been working with Congressman Paul?
Well, I started working for Dr. Paul in 1988 when he first ran for president on a Libertarian ticket, and stayed in touch with him all these years, and during the last 8 years headed his Liberty Committee until he asked me to head his presidential campaign.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you tell us, really, what does Congressman Paul stand for, and why should people want to vote for him?
Well, in a word, he stands for freedom, and that's very unusual here, especially in our nation's capital. But Dr. Paul talks about freedom being a new idea, certainly new in the history of mankind, and why it's a wonderful idea, something that our founders of our country created and brought to bear in terms of the Constitution. So he always talks about freedom being the answer to most all of our problems. And so for people who agree with that, the freedom philosophy, that it is the best way of living as human beings, as spiritual beings and all that, that they should support him, because we contend that Dr. Paul is really the only true freedom fighter in Washington, D.C. In fact, I say all the time that he is certainly the leading advocate for freedom in our nation's capital.
Well, now, do you mind if I play the devil's advocate?
Sure, go ahead.
All right, well, now, look, if we didn't have the government to look after people, what would happen to the people who were poor and didn't have any money and would be starving or sleeping in their cars? And I mean, certainly if we didn't have the government looking after them, how could these people possibly survive in the middle of winter when there's ice and snow on the ground?
Well, I argue that they actually would do better. If you go back several decades before the big government social programs and that sort of thing, those sorts of people were, and there's a lot of people who are truly in need, not to dismiss them at all, but they were taken care of by churches and individuals and family members and friends and neighbors and various organizations, charitable groups. Dr. Paul talks about when he first entered medicine after he got out of Duke University Medical School that he worked as an emergency room physician in a church hospital in Texas and was paid $3 a day, and no one was ever turned away. Everyone received the care that they needed. They weren't asked for any sort of payment unless they could afford it, and people were taken care of. So, the question is, how were people taken care of before big government? They were taken care of fairly well.
And I know, because I'm of the same age, maybe even a little older than Ron, but under any circumstances, I too got $3 a day working in a county hospital. But the thing is that it was up to the local community to look after them. I mean, certainly you had the people and churches and charitable organizations, but every county had facilities to take care of the poor or to provide health care for the poor if there was no other source. And nobody died from lack of health care, and nobody starved to death in America. But, of course, that has all changed, hasn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. And, of course, unfortunately, when you get government involved, as you know, whether it's in medicine or education or whatever subject it is, the bureaucrats always have to have their cut. They always have to have their share. And from time to time, I will read studies that for every dollar, tax dollar, that is collected for social programs that you're talking about now, 40 cents of it, if not more, goes in the pocket of a bureaucrat here in Washington, D.C., to pay for their nice house and various expenses and that sort of thing. So I would just as soon let people get the money directly and get a lot more for the dollar spent in that regard.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly our guest this afternoon is Kent Snyder. Now, we'd anticipated having Congressman Ron Paul, who's very eloquent and certainly is the champion of freedom in Washington, D.C., the one congressman many times who'll vote against the herd. Many times a vote will be 434-1, something like that. That's why he's known as Dr. No. Is that really true that they do call Congressman Paul Dr. No?
Yes, they do. I curse Noah a lot of times when they say that, people say that, they try to dismiss him. But Dr. Paul likes to say, a no vote for a lot of the legislation is really a yes vote for the Constitution, and it's a yes vote for freedom. As you probably know, and your listeners probably know, that I would say 95% of the legislation introduced in Washington is unconstitutional, it's bad policy, and all those sorts of things. So a reasonable person who understands the freedom philosophy and understands the idea of limited government would vote no as well.
And, of course, Congressman Paul has built a reputation over a period of many years. This is his second stint in Congress. How long was he in Congress the first time?
Well, this is his 10th term. He first entered Congress in 1976 and stayed a couple of terms and then went back to medicine and then went back in 1994 to join the so-called Republican Revolution, which, of course, didn't last very long. But he was enthusiastic, as a lot of people, me included, that was the year that the Republican limited government pro-freedom forces were going to take over Washington. Of course, that changed dramatically. But he went back in 1994 and has been serving since then.
Well, I think we're very, very lucky to have had him there. It's a great personal sacrifice for him to give up medicine, which he loved doing, to enter politics, which I'm sure he doesn't like doing, but there has to be a voice of sanity there. And he has always been that voice of sanity. And if you look and see how he votes, he always votes in favor of the Constitution, which he has sworn to uphold. And, of course, he's sorely criticized for it, because, Kent, it almost appears that most of the people in Washington, D.C., although they've sworn to uphold the Constitution, don't believe in it.
That's true. And, you know, the people here in Washington, D.C. will cite the Constitution when it fits their particular ends. And, you know, you'll see eloquent speeches on both sides of the aisle, all kinds of political persuasions. But, of course, they're the first to ignore it and say, well, this is an exception. But as Dr. Paul says, if you make an exception out of any part of the Constitution, then that means you don't believe in it at all, because if you don't like the First Amendment, then that means the Second Amendment doesn't mean anything. So you have to respect the whole Constitution. It is the rule of law. Most people think it's simply a historical document.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Kent Snyder, who was good enough to fill in when we couldn't get Congressman Paul because he had to be on the floor of the House of Representatives. And unlike Hillary Clinton and Obama and John McCain and all the others who are spending all their time, you know, traveling across the country and leaving their duties in Washington, D.C. go by the wayside, why Congressman Paul is spending most of his time back there. And certainly when there's votes to be taken, important votes, he'll be there to vote on the certainly for the constitutional principles that once made America the envy of the world. Well, how does Congressman Paul feel about the war? Certainly, this is one of the big dividing issues, and most Republicans support the war in the Middle East, and most liberals support the idea of pulling our troops out and bringing them home. And Congressman Paul seems to be siding with the liberals on this issue. How could that be?
Well, he's not really siding with the liberals. He argues all the time, and I think correctly so, that he sides with the true conservatives. If you take a look, there's other conservatives in the House, six of them, including Dr. Paul, that spoke against it. And he would say that if you take a look at it, the war, empire building, invading other countries, preemptive strike, is not truly conservative. And if you go back, you know, it was the Republicans who benefited from a democratic war policy, whether you go back to Vietnam or Korea. I mean, Truman, you take a look at Kennedy and Johnson and that sort of thing. So it was the Republicans who actually benefited by being the peace party historically. And, of course, again, if you look at the true conservative position that's so eloquently talked about by conservative icons of the last 40 or 50 years, you know, it's invading other countries, and especially when they don't harm us or have any of the means to harm us, is not a conservative position. So he takes the true conservative position on the war and foreign policy.
But of course, we're told that if we pull our troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan, they're going to follow us home and come after us. We have to fight them there, or as the president said, we either fight them on the streets of Baghdad or we fight them on the streets of New York. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think that's just a silly idea, and the reason is because if you take a look at Osama bin Laden, things that he has said, and some of his lieutenants, they actually want. This is the thing that's so interesting. They actually want American troops over there, and the reason they want them over there is because we're a lot closer to shoot at. This serves their interests. Osama bin Laden has talked about that. His lieutenants have talked about that. That the best thing that they could have hoped for was for the United States to invade some country in the Middle East. This is what they wanted. So we played right into their hands. Most Americans, or many Americans, think, oh, my gosh, you know, as you said, if we don't fight them over here, we're going to fight them. I mean, over there, we're going to fight them over here. The enemy, Al-Qaeda, they want us to be over there because they can pick us off. Keep in mind, the Al-Qaeda and most nations don't have large armies, air forces, missiles, rockets, and those sorts of things. So they have to resort to the only tactical military method they have, which is terrorism. And so we're playing right into their hands. And unfortunately, you know, as Dr. Paul says, it's not that we, if what's going to happen when we pull out, the problem is that we went in the first place.
I think he's absolutely right. Well, and of course, the thing is, I would simply add that if they were going to follow us home, why haven't they followed us home? It's over 6 years since the September 11th attack in 2001, and why have they attacked us here? I mean, Osama can't even find one terrorist bomber to sneak across the southern border, which is wide open, and go into a marketplace here in America. He can't even find one terrorist. They're over in Israel all the time. They're in Baghdad, but he can't even find one. Maybe they're not as much of a threat as we're being told. Do you think that maybe some people are simply trying to exaggerate the threat to justify keeping our boys over there, getting them killed?
Well, I think that's true, sir. And all you have to do is look at the beginning of the war. I mean, what exaggerations were made to leading up to the invasion of Iraq? I mean, and all those claims and predictions that were made at that time have all been disproven. And so the very people that essentially lied to us getting us into the war, we're supposed to listen to those same people when it comes to trying to get out? I mean, that's just silly. I mean, I'm not the smartest kid in the world, but if someone keeps telling you lie after lie after lie, I mean, after a while, you shouldn't probably listen to what they're talking about anymore.
Well, no, because one of the things that really concerns me is that, you know, our boys are going overseas to fight for freedom. We're losing our freedom here at home, and they're, you know, through the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act and the Mental Health Defense Act and the Homeland Security Act and the John Warner Defense Appropriations Act, they're passing all sorts of draconian legislation that really is laying the foundation for a military dictatorship here at home. Is Congressman Paul concerned about this massive expansion of government control in the name of protecting us from the wicked terrorists who want to take away our freedom?
Oh, yeah. He talks about that frequently. He talked about that even as warnings, you know, immediately after 9/11, when so many people seemed to want to go ahead and give away all their freedom and liberty and privacy rights and that sort of thing in the name of patriotism. But, my goodness, if America keeps changing, if we become a country of the national ID and registration and surveillance and inspections of the library records and financial records, and the list goes on and on and on, what country, what have we become? I mean, I would argue in a very practical way that the terrorists have won every time we change our American way of life. I mean, every time we become an obedient citizen of the state and openly say it's fine, the terrorists have won. So I reject the whole idea, one, because it's not American, it's un-American, and I don't like the idea that a few people can make an entire nation, literally an entire nation, change its ways. I find that very offensive, and I reject it wholeheartedly.
Well, now, how did Congressman Paul vote on the on the Patriot Bill that was put in, of course, almost a jam through Congress shortly after the 9/11 attack, after somebody sent a couple of Democratic senators anthrax-laden envelopes, and then, of course, a couple of people in the in the media were killed. Four or five people died, and I thought it was very interesting that only Democratic senators got the anthrax-laden letters, but certainly the majority of the people voted in favor of the Patriot Act. What did Congressman Paul do? Did he vote for it?
No, he voted against it, and he spoke against it, and he warned what it was going to do. I mean, the Patriot Act was written fairly hastily, post 9/11, but it wasn't written hastily before. And what I mean by that is that many of the provisions of the Patriot Act have been tried, have been talked about in Washington for years before 9/11 ever happened. Now, that ought to give people pause to think, now, what is this meaning? I mean, let's say, okay, that the provisions of the Patriot Act, executive power authority of the executive branch to do things, getting rid of habeas corpus, warrantless searches, the list goes on and on, financial record disclosures, et cetera. These provisions were actually discussed and in some cases actually put in the legislation years before 9/11 ever happened. And all of a sudden 9/11 happened. These things were then quickly assembled. Members of Congress were given literally just a few hours to read the 600-page bill. It was passed in the rush to patriotism and a reaction to the 9/11 attacks. And now what do we have? We have the Homeland Security Director, one man within the executive branch that has authority to decide on his own what's going to be in the new national ID card, the biometric scans, that sort of thing, and the sort of power that these people now have that we willingly gave them is frightening as far as I'm concerned. I would argue, some people might get upset with this, but I would argue that the power that we have invested in our executive branch is no less the power that Saddam Hussein had when he was dictator of Iraq.
Well, of course, don't we need to give them the power to protect us from the wicked Osama bin Laden living over there in the cave who wants to take away our freedom?
Well, I tell you, it's interesting about Osama bin Laden and all that. I mean, Dr. Paul talks about all the time that the United States won the Cold War. We had a nation that was pointing 30,000 nuclear missiles at us. And that was a showdown for many, many, many years. We had the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was real. We survived that. No bloodshed was done. And yet Osama bin Laden and, a small group of his followers have done what they've done. And, of course, keep in mind that this is now how many years into the Iraq War. Thousands of lives have been lost. Tens of thousands have been maimed severely. Tens of thousands of Iraqi civilians, women and children, have been killed as so-called collateral damage, which is horrendous. And yet Osama bin Laden, the person responsible for 9/11, is still at large. He's probably in Pakistan, a country that we are now friendly with. We give money to Pakistan. Pakistan has nuclear weapons. It's now ruled by a military dictator who overthrew an elected government in Pakistan. And gasoline is an all-time high. The Middle East is more tenuous at best. So when you take a look at it, any reasonable assessment or conclusion say that it has been a real loser all around.
And, of course, the president promised he'd get us Osama bin Laden dead or alive. He just never said when he was going to get Osama bin Laden for us dead or alive. We'll be back in just a moment with Ken Snyder right here at Radio Liberty. Oh, I guess we've got 1 minute before we have to actually go to that. Well, when we get back, I really want to talk a little bit about what's happening financially. I mean, most people, of course, think that America is a very, very successful society. Certainly the stock market is reaching new heights. But there are a few people out there in the certainly across America who are warning we're on the edge of a financial catastrophe. They point out that the CEO of the General Accounting Office, David Walker, has warned that America's bankrupt. Professor Kiplikoff, or Kotlikoff, has written an article for the St. Louis branch of the Federal Reserve System, saying America is bankrupt. We're going to be back in just a moment with Mr. Snyder as we evaluate the financial condition of our society. Well, Kent, would you like to address where we stand financially? Certainly, at one time, we were the greatest creditor nation in the world, but that doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
No, and that's not the case, unfortunately, and sooner or later, we're going to have to pay our bills. I mean, as bills have to be paid. Unfortunately, the so-called economic boom that people talk about on these various financial shows, it's all on borrowed money. And sure, you can have a good time on borrowed money. Anyone can take their credit card with a $10,000 credit limit and go out and live an interesting lifestyle for a short period of time. You can act big, you can talk big, you can spend money here and there. You can create the appearance that you have a lot of assets. But sooner or later, the credit card bill has to be paid, and the countries and governments are no different. So the so-called prosperity that people are enjoying is going to come to an end, unfortunately. And I think a lot of average Americans are seeing that in their own lives, whether it's with the housing market or the inflation tax that a lot of people sooner or later pick up on and that sort of thing. And Dr. Paul says often that this so-called monetary system is becoming so bad and so imbalanced that it's now becoming a national security issue. And what he means by that is if countries such as China decide overnight to stop buying treasuries and stop lending us money so we can carry on this artificial prosperity, we're going to be in very big trouble.
Well, you know, because Congressman Paul has been on the front lines of this effort to let the American people understand these banking system we have. It's something called the Federal Reserve System. But, of course, it's neither federal nor does it have any reserves. And Congressman Paul, certainly, I think we owe him a debt of gratitude for getting the situation through Congress where the Mint actually creates gold and silver coins, which was traditionally the coin of the realm. But what is Congressman Paul's attitude towards the Federal Reserve System, which has given us the tremendous paper prosperity, the one day, of course, we're going to have to get back down to earth and stop this inflationary bubble that threatens to disrupt not only our own economy, but the economy of the world. How does he feel about what's happening economically?
Well, he's a long-time supporter of gold and silver being legal tender, as the Constitution talks about, and there's all kinds of historical reasons for that as far as why the founders made that the case. But when you don't have the restraints of illegal tender money, gold and silver money, and you allow governments to tax, when you allow them to borrow, but more insidiously, when you allow them to print money out of thin air, then there is no real restraint on government at all. And politicians can go to Washington and promise all sorts of handouts. They go to the Federal Reserve to say, I promised my constituents $500 million for this project or $5 billion for that project, whether it's the military-industrial complex, healthcare, education, you name it. And the Federal Reserve simply prints money. And as you know, the more you have of something, the less value it has. And so when you print money out of thin air, that's a problem. And one of these days, the world market is going to not trust that phrase, the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, because they will realize that America is essentially a bankrupt country and that we owe a lot more than we will ever be able to produce when you consider all the obligations for the war, but all the Medicare prescription drug benefits and all the so-called entitlements. When you stretch it out, we are into the tens of trillions.
Hold that thought there, Kent. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was asking Kent Snyder. Now, you have to understand, Kent has worked with Congressman Paul going back to the 1980s, and he is heading his campaign for the presidency, and we'll talk a little bit more about that at the half hour. But Kent can, I think, express what Congressman Paul feels about our monetary system. It's a system by which you create money out of nothing. The Federal Reserve System, being a privately owned central bank, is simply able to print money. But any time you expand the money supply, you decrease the value of our currency. And unfortunately, America has now become the greatest debtor nation in the world. And of course, you can't pay it off when, of course, your manufacturing base is shrinking. You know, I was really amazed to hear that, you know, it was just this last month or two, within the last 2 months, that China has surpassed America as the greatest exporter nation in the world. We have always been the greatest exporter, the most vibrant economy, and suddenly we find our position usurped by Communist China. And we never refer to it as Communist China, but it is Communist China that we seem to be financing and lending money to and transferring technology to and transferring military technology to. And we're creating this industrial giant that now has simply exceeded our own industrial base. Do you think that this is going to have any ramifications down the line?
Yes. I mean, you know, our manufacturing jobs, you know, are 3 million or so out of the United States, and they probably will never come back. And as Dr. Paul says, sooner or later, you know, we're going to have to go back to work and actually produce and manufacture goods and services. We just can't, you know, be living on borrowed money. But, you know, when you have the Federal Reserve System the way it is, you have government with absolutely no constraints whatsoever, either by the Constitution or by a commodity-based currency, then the sky's the limit. And unfortunately, we are reaching the stratosphere, and the air is getting pretty thin.
Well, of course, did you read that article the other day in the Wall Street Journal about Professor Blinder of Princeton University, who pointed out that after supporting globalism really for all of his professional life, he suddenly began to think, where are we going to get the jobs? We have 40 million jobs that we can lose, our manufacturing jobs and 20 million others that can be done much more cheaply and just as efficiently overseas. So if we lose 40 million jobs, what's going to happen to our economy? Is there anybody commenting on that in Washington, D.C., or considering that maybe Dr. Blinder is right? We lose 40 million jobs, and what's the average American going to be doing?
Well, I think there is talk about that because it's politicians here in D.C. know that they need to talk about it. But my honest assessment of most politicians of both parties here in Washington is they don't consider the United States to be their country anymore. What I mean by that is they consider themselves to be leaders, political leaders of the global economy or community, or world leaders. That now that the United States of America is simply a spoke in their wheel of fortune, as I call it, I've actually heard some of them say that they believe that the United States is an antiquated idea. It's an idea that has come and gone, and that we now need to be leaders of the world. And so they consider themselves to be leaders of the world, citizens of the world, and the United States not to be a country anymore, which is why a lot of them, both Republican and Democrat, are for the North American Union, which is the unification of Canada, United States, Mexico, Central America, and even Latin America. So they see themselves, again, as leaders of the world, not of the United States of America any longer.
Well, then they should certainly resign their positions because they've sworn an oath to uphold our Constitution. And, of course, if they don't believe in America, they don't believe in our Constitution, then they should not be serving. Otherwise, they're traitors to our nation.
Oh, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you that they are. But unfortunately, that's what a lot of them think about their roles. They think that they are enlightened, that they're progressive, that they're far in the future. They're leaders, they're vanguards, use whatever words you want. But again, they consider the United States of America to be an old-fashioned idea, and they are going to march us on into greater and grander things, at least in their mind.
But of course, what we're talking about is the end of the sovereignty of the United States of America. And then how will we maintain our freedom? We have our freedom because we have a Constitution. If our congressional and Senate leaders don't believe in the Constitution, then who will protect us from the tyrant?
Well, that's the question. I mean, you can have a tyrant of one or you can have a tyrant of a group, but unless the citizens embrace the rule of law, the Constitution, the idea of a limited government, there's going to be all sorts of people out there that are going to try to take power and exercise power over the citizenry, which, of course, we have to be very fearful of, diligent against every day.
Yeah, and I certainly agree. And I think Kent expresses Congressman Paul's views very well. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Kent Snyder. And Kent is the head of the Congressman Paul's presidential campaign. And as soon as we bring all of our stations back on, I'll let him tell you a little bit about the campaign. But certainly it's rather frightening, as Mr. Snyder tells us, that so many of the people back in Washington, D.C., and he's speaking now of our congressional leaders, really do not believe in our Constitution. They do not believe in the sovereignty of America. They do not consider themselves American citizens. They believe that they are the leaders of the world. Would that be a fair appraisal of what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know how these people get this notion that they are leaders of the world and that that sort of thing. But unfortunately, it must be in the water here in D.C. or the Potomac or something. But that's how they see themselves, and unfortunately, that's how they act, especially in their votes.
Well, now, of course, the thing is that do they reflect the attitudes of the American citizenry? I mean, the American citizenry, the vast majority, are against this unbridled immigration. The American citizens are against giving up our sovereignty. In fact, they're down there in Texas. Why, as you well know, the recent votes by both the House and the Senate were against the NAFTA highway, which is part of this whole idea of the Security and Prosperity Partnership. I mean, I would suspect that if you were to poll the American people, you wouldn't find more than 10% that want to give up our sovereignty and join the North American Union. So who do these congressmen really represent? Or do we have an example of the finest politicians money can buy?
No, that's what it is. Who do they represent? They represent special interests here within the United States and around the world. They consider their constituents to simply be, in my view, nuisances that they have to go back to from time to time to appease and to placate and that sort of thing. I also consider a lot of these people in Washington, whether politicians or bureaucrats or the special interests, as bullies. And what I mean by that is, let's say, for example, the North American Union, the NAFTA superhighway, and these sorts of things. These people work behind the scenes. They work. They get paid well. They go to all these luncheons and dinners and seminars. They come up with these ideas. They're very patient, and they keep advancing their agenda. Most Americans are too busy running their own lives as they should be to even be worried about it. They can't believe a lot of these things that go on. But these people are bullies, and they keep pushing their ideas and keep pushing their ideas on us. And then all of a sudden they get some appropriated money, and they start getting some studies, and then they start breaking ground, let's say, on the first leg of this NAFTA superhighway, or they build a couple buildings.
Hold on. We'll be right back here with Kirk. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is Kent Snyder, who is the director or president or chairman of the Ron Paul Presidential Committee. And certainly they're exploring his effort to run for the presidency of the United States. So before we go on at this point of the program, I'd like you to tell us about Ron Paul's presidential bid. Has he declared, or is he simply exploring running? How can people get more information? How can the average person out there in the listening audience, if they really support their Congressman Paul, get in and help him?
Well, the quickest way and the best way is for people to go to ronpaul2008.com, our website, ronpaul2008.com, easy to remember, and to join us, register their interest by giving us their contact information, by making a contribution if they can, and by spreading the word. Those are the three things we ask people to do. But Dr. Paul did start an exploratory committee a few months ago to see if there was interest. He was surprised. There is a great deal of interest, and we got the waters tested that way. We just recently opened our campaign committee. He officially filed a few weeks ago, so we've only been in operation a short time. And he's made three trips, one to New Hampshire, one to Iowa, and one to Arizona. And they were very successful. And we're putting a team together here in Washington as the campaign staff. We're redesigning our website to be a full-blown campaign website, which should come on the board here within the next week or so. But the biggest news is that Dr. Paul will be part of the presidential debate hosted at the Reagan Library on Thursday, a week from tomorrow, on May 3rd. He'll be there and being a part of that important event, and he'll also be a part of the CNN debate in Manchester, New Hampshire on June the 5th. So he is a candidate, and we're a small campaign, but we're energetic, and we've got a lot of people around the country, and we're just getting started, so we're moving into full steam ahead.
Well, now, has he officially declared he is a candidate? I don't quite understand. You open an exploratory committee, and then you open a campaign office, and certainly John McCain today announced he is a candidate for the presidency. What's the difference between an exploratory committee opening up a campaign office and announcing you're a candidate for the presidency?
Well, the difference is basically some of the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, rules and regulations. As an exploratory committee, you can accept money and so-called test the waters, as they call it, without having a lot of forms to fill out and that sort of thing. But then you have to make a decision. If you're an official candidate, you file the paperwork with the Federal Election Commission, and from that point on, then you're under a lot more scrutiny and regulations, a lot of forms to fill out and whatnot. So, as you said, today Senator John McCain became an official candidate. He's had the exploratory committee for a long time. Dr. Paul had one for a short time and then made the official announcement and made the switch to the campaign committee.
Now, does that mean he is officially a candidate for the presidency?
Yes, he's an official candidate for the Republican nomination for president.
Gee, it's amazing to me. I was listening to CBS, and I haven't heard that mentioned at all by the major media.
Well, we have some difficulty getting noticed by the major media, but thank goodness for the Internet and shows like yours so we can get the word out and let people know. Fortunately for people like us who do not rely upon the major media because they don't have the opinion that we do, again, because of shows like yours, the Internet, and the various other methods, the word is getting out, and so we're thankful for that.
And so Congressman Paul is an official candidate. Well, if people wanted to give money to the campaign, they would just go to your website. Would they put it on a Visa, MasterCard? How would they go about making that? Would they send a check?
There's a couple ways. They go to our website, actually, for all the ways. They can make an online contribution with their credit card. If they choose or prefer to send a check, there's a downloadable form that they can print and then include their check with the mailing instructions right there. So we try to make it as easy as possible. And, of course, there's some of the necessary FEC language in terms of the maximum donations and that sort of thing that we have to have. But just going to our site, hitting the contribute button, would be the quickest and easiest way for anybody to do that.
Now, of course, the funds really are absolutely essential to run any sort of a campaign, aren't they?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's, you know, you've got telephone bills and utilities and rent, and, of course, the cost of living isn't that modest here in Washington, D.C., and of course, another big expense is traveling expenses, you know, to go from one city to the other and all that, and then, of course, we would like to have money where we can do some media work and commercials and those sorts of things. So it does take money, and that's just the world we live in, and I wish it didn't take as much as it will, but it does, and so we just have to ask people for their help and hope that they respond. So far, people have been responsive to our effort, and we're encouraged by it.
And I think it's, if you believe, of course, in this message that Kent is talking about, this idea that we really need to maintain our Constitution. In fact, it was Jay Leno who said that, you know, rather than, of course, have the Iraqis write up a whole new constitution, we ought to just give them ours because we don't use it much anymore. And although, of course, everybody laughed, there's a lot of truth to that. America is different than other nations because of our constitution, because of our Christian heritage. The Christian heritage is being eroded, and certainly the constitution is largely ignored by people. Back in Washington, D.C., in both political parties, who seem to be hell-bent upon the destruction of what was land of the free and the home of the brave, and this whole idea of globalism, America leading the whole world to this wonderful utopian future. Well, Kent, you know, certainly are you going to be setting up campaign committees in every state, hopefully, to begin actually collecting signatures, or how does that work? Certainly have to get a certain number of petitions signed to get them on the ballot, say, in a place like California, and California is going to be one of the keys.
Oh, sure. What we're going to do is, because of today's communications and Internet and telecommuting and everything else, we're going to be relying very heavily on what we call an electronic campaign. John Edwards, who has plenty of money, he's designed a completely new campaign because of the new electronic possibilities that we have. So we're going to be doing that. We're very frugal with our money. but we're going to be having a nationwide campaign. We're going to be focusing on four states first, Arizona, New Hampshire, Iowa, and South Carolina. But because of the switch in the primary dates, we'll be going to the other states soon thereafter. But people can, the nice thing is because of the Internet and other things, people can be a part of the campaign regardless of where they live. And I know some campaigns are shying away from creating and operating large offices because it costs so much money. But, again, thank goodness for the Internet and all the creative things that, are available to us.
Well, now, certainly that there are a number of ways of handling this sort of thing. And certainly we know that John Edwards has unlimited funds. We've heard he spends something like $400 for a haircut. I don't know whether that's right. Is that really true? Do we know whether that's true? Jay Leno keeps talking about the $400 haircuts.
Well, we know what when Bill Clinton was president, he paid $100 or $150, and that's been a few years ago. And we know John Kerry did when he was running for president, and we know that Hillary Clinton has paid a couple hundred at a very exclusive salon in Georgetown, which is not too far from where I am now. I don't live in Georgetown nor work there, but I'm, if you will, on the other side of the tracks from Georgetown. So maybe John Edwards, with inflation, maybe he is paying $400 a haircut.
Well, now, of course, one of the things that Ron Paul has done in the past, he had a 1 or 2 minute message you could dial in every week, and you could get his thoughts on various issues. Are those still available that people could actually dial in and hear him talking every week?
Oh yes, they can do that. Nothing has changed in that regard, and as probably many of your listeners know, Congressman Paul's congressional website has a wealth of information in terms of all of the statements and that sort of thing.
Now, well, why don't you tell them, first of all, how to get that one-minute message, a two-minute message, and then how to get to his congressional website, and then how to get to the presidential committee website.
Okay, well, the best number to remember in terms of people wanting to make a phone call is simply dial 1-800-RON-PAUL. So that's easy to remember. And if you just remember that number, the person there can direct you. The congressional website, people can go to house.gov/Paul, or just go to house.gov and look up Congressman Ron Paul's office as they can with their own individual congressman. And the campaign office or the campaign committee website is, again, ronpaul2008.com. And so those are fairly easy to remember, or just go in and put Ron Paul in a search engine like Google or Yahoo, and you should find it pretty quickly.
That's ronpaul2008.com, ronpaul2008.com, or I certainly Google it in, and you can get to the congressional office. Now, certainly Congressman Paul usually about once a week puts out a little short blurb, and I read them every week. They come in on the News with Views when I pull that down. I'm sorry. World Affairs Brief. How can people get that weekly little missile that he puts out in written form?
The best thing to do is just to call 1-800-RON-PAUL.
And, of course, this would be up on his congressional website as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So just a couple things to remember there. And if you don't, just ask what you want, and most of the time, all the time, people will know how to direct you.
And certainly, what he says is really very brief, very to the point, and very concise, and certainly always founded on the Constitution. I've been very impressed reading what he's written through the years.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's the thing about Dr. Paul is, he's one of those unique people in Congress I know he'd love to be back into medicine full time, but he considers the idea of a citizen legislature to be the right thing. He tries to explain his position as carefully as he can. I think he does an excellent job, as most people agree with that. And he explains what and why he does things in a very patient way and a very succinct way. And over the years, people have understood him. They've appreciated it. They've respected his views. They know where he's coming from. And there's really not anyone in Washington, regardless of political party, even if they disagree with Ron's views, they really all respect his consistent application of principle. And I've heard so many members of Congress and other people here in D.C. that say, we know where Dr. Paul stands, we know why he stands where he is, we know what to expect. He's a very consistent man, And life in general, you don't get that among people, and certainly here in Washington, that's a rare commodity.
Yes, a man of principle in Washington, D.C. is really really very unusual. Most people want their perks and their privileges, but of course Ron Paul stands on principle. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. We have only a few minutes more with Kent Snyder, but if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and I would let you talk to Kent. And if you have any specific questions about Congressman Paul's position, I'm sure Kent knows how he feels about the major issues of today. Now, certainly Congressman Paul has, through the years, has had a position on the legalization of drugs. And, of course, at one time I was already sort of abhorrent of even thinking of stopping the federal control over drugs. But you know, the one thing I've come to the conclusion, if we can't keep drugs out of our prisons, how can we possibly expect to keep it out of our society? Maybe we're taking the wrong approach when today in America we have something like 7 million Americans on probation, a parole, or in prison. And maybe we're doing something wrong with this whole drug issue. How does he feel about drugs? Does he think this should be a state or local issue rather than a federal issue?
Yes, yeah, certainly that, because most crimes should be handled, and most crimes are handled at the state level, whether they be murder or robbery or what have you. And, you know, there really are only a few crimes that can be federalized, but that's another subject. But in terms of the drug use, Dr. Paul says, well, let's take a look at what has gone on. We know prohibition on alcohol didn't work. We take a look at the cities like Washington, D.C. It has more laws against guns, more laws against drugs. Yet there are more crimes involving guns, and there are more drug crimes and that sort of thing. But, you know, the drug issue, as people understand when they think about it, is really more of a medical issue and that sort of thing. And it's unfortunate that people get involved with that. As Dr. Paul says, I believe in the freedom of choice. And we're not talking about the abortion issue, that's separate, but the freedom of choice, even though I may not agree with the choices that you make. And he would do everything he could as a person, as a father, as a grandfather, as a physician, to persuade people not to take drugs that can be very harmful to them, and that sort of thing. But as he says, you know, if you're an adult, you have the right to consume with in your body what you want, to think the way you want, and that sort of thing. And you're right, Dr. Monteith, I mean, the number of people that we have incarcerated in the name of the so-called drug war is really criminal in and of itself. It really is very sad when you step back and look at that and you see what those people become once they have their time in prison. So it just doesn't work. It doesn't make any sense. And if we keep doing this, we're going to have more of the same. And just as a footnote, the drug lords who make billions of dollars in profits are the ones who love our drug laws. And that's something that most people don't consider.
And of course, really the right now, of course, the federal government wants to take away our right to have vitamins. I mean, they want to make every vitamin considered a medicine. We have to have a prescription. And of course, they seem to be wanting to expand federal control over all drugs, not only over narcotics. And after all, if we give them the right to regulate narcotics, why shouldn't they be able to regulate vitamins, how many units are there in vitamin C you're allowed to take a day, how many units of vitamin D, or certainly whether what minerals you should be allowed to have. If they have a right to regulate the narcotics, why not everything? Would you agree with that? I mean, that would certainly be the logical thing.
Oh, absolutely. That's absolutely right. And so when you give in to this notion or idea that the government is there to protect you, that you have to rely on them to tell you what's good for you, what's bad for you, to get their permission, which of course is even worse, then once you agree to that principle and practice, then everything is fair game, whether it's narcotics or smoking or whether or not you can have two patties with your McDonald's hamburger or you can have a large fry or a small fry or this or that. I mean, it is the nanny state to the absurd degree. But once the citizens buy into the idea that I'm not responsible for my life, that someone else, the government, is responsible for their lives, then the people who want it to be in control then clap their hands, smile, and say, now we've got them, now we can tell these people, these sheep, how to live, and they will do exactly that.
And, of course, what about the obesity epidemic? We're going to have to do something about obesity. Why shouldn't government really be able to regulate what we eat? That's one way of controlling obesity. After all, there's some people who just can't control this on their own. Eating is an addiction. Well, we need a whole new series of government laws, the food police. We'll be right back in just a moment. And I'm not being entirely facetious. There are people who really think that way. Well, we have Rita calling from Colorado. Hi, Rita. How are you doing? Oh, Rita, or I guess Rita, I've got to push the button. Hi, Rita. How are you doing?
Fine. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can hear you just fine.
Okay.
People out all over the world are hearing your voice right now, you know, from Japan all the way around into Siberia, into Europe, and right back here in Colorado. So tell us, do you have a question for Kim?
Yeah. Well, I had talked, and I talked to the governor here who had run for governor, and I talked to him twice about this, and he's a really, you know, interested why people are doing homeschooling, why are they, you know, scared of the government, what's going on. I said, well, you know, Bill Ritter, that these people are really, really tired of all of this monolithic government coming down on us.
And so what did he say to that?
And he agreed with me, and the next time through Colorado, when he came to Trinidad, it seemed like he had changed his speech. And what I think is, you know, this is kind of a bridge that we in our community can tell the politicians, because they can take this and run with it, because that's something that you know hits home with all the people across the nation. You know, we don't have to get into everything, but I mean, we do get into it, because I know what's going on is they're destroying our faith. You know, they destroy
Christianity
had before.
And they're taking away our freedom. And thanks very much, Peter. And I appreciate you speaking to the governor, and I hope you had an influence on him. Well, Kent, we've got about a minute and a half for you to wrap up the program. What's the parting thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I would just like to tell people that we have a unique opportunity in that Congressman Paul, who has a long history of being for freedom and fighting for freedom, not only in the military when he was back there in the Air Force, but now most recently, he's a known quantity. We claim, and arguably so, that he is the real Republican. He's the true conservative in the race. People can check his record and understand why we make that claim. And for those people who believe that freedom is the answer for most all of our problems and the way we want to live, they should support him. We encourage them, people, to look at his record and to compare and contrast him with all the other candidates. And again, for people who believe that freedom is the answer for Americans as well as for people around the world, they should support him. And we ask them to do that by going to ronpaul2008.com, signing up, making a contribution, spreading the word, and also make sure to mark May 3rd on your calendar for the Reagan debates. That should be an exciting time.
All right. Well, God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us on rather short order. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope that you enjoyed our conversation with Kent Snyder, who's here representing Congressman Ron Paul, who is unable to be with us. Again, the website, www.ronpaul2008.com. That's ronpaul2008.com. If you'd like to, you can't remember that, you can always call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be glad to get that information for you, or just go up on the Internet and Google in Congressman Ron Paul, a presidential campaign. Now, first, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family, which is how we're able to maintain a foundation of almost 60 outlets across America every week. And, of course, some are Internet, and some of them are shortwave, and some of them are satellite, and some of them are radio stations. But at least we have a voice, and people are hearing the truth about the spiritual battle which is being fought today. And, of course, as Kent was saying, many of the congressmen look upon themselves as being globalists, the leaders of this new world. And that is what it is really all about. For 5,000 years, there's been a plan to bring about a new world order with a new world religion and with a new world leader. And if you haven't seen my talk, first of all, Brotherhood of Darkness, or read the book, shame on you. You need to get it. You need to have this information. You need to check out the references. You need to find out if what I'm telling you is true. And then, of course, you need to get our latest talk, which is entitled Forbidden Secret, where we tell you the secret that has been passed down for 5,000 years, never discussed publicly, because, of course, it could cost you your life if you ever reveal the secret. And yet that secret is increasingly being brought out today, which is what convinces me as much as anything that we are approaching the latter days. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get the DVDs put out by Chris Pinto, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. That's The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And then, of course, Riddles in Stone. Really very important. And then, of course, Joe Simmel's wonderful DVDs, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version, available in video or DVD. They sold their souls for rock and roll. It's the story of the music industry. But, of course, the same thing is happening in politics, in banking. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, even in our seminaries, in our major churches, there are people who have who've made a deal, who've made a bargain. And they have great fame and great rewards, but one day they're going to have to stand before God and answer for what they've done. The betrayal of our Lord, the betrayal of our country, the betrayal of all mankind. Well, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And certainly our webpage is radioliberty.com. And if you don't know, you can actually listen to us there 3 hours a day at radioliberty.com. And then certainly on the Internet, programs are live. They're archived. They're MP3. You can go to Global Star, and you can get the feed at my website, the Global Star Internet feed, or you can simply type in www.globalstar.com, and then once you get there, why, of course, go to Channel 4, and you can listen in 9 hours a day to my programs, and you're certainly not going to get much accomplished, but it is up there, and it gets the feed that goes to our satellite uplink, and we do hope that you'll tell others about our programs. To understand that we are involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. If you'd like to know why we are in Iraq today and why we're going to war with Iran, you'll want to read my February newsletter. It's at radioliberty.com. You can pull it down for nothing. Or if you need a free copy, call us at 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. But pray for Radio Liberty. And again, our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today.